And you have to ask yourself too, like, are you adding new people to a new process? Is it the person? Do you have the right people in the right seat? Or is it the process? Or is it both? I think figuring those things out and having the, you know, tenacity and resilience to wake up every day and go face those problems again every single day is the hardest part to me.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby. And today we have a very special episode because I'm here in Atlanta, Georgia, recording in person with a repeat guest, Amanda Brandenburg.
Like, one of our main core values is intellectual curiosity. So I feel so strongly that if you're not intellectually curious, like, this is not the job for you. And of course, you have to be able to connect with people, which is easier said than done.
In today's episode, you'll hear a very realistic and relatable story of how Amanda has grown her practice from a small team of three to a growing team of six.
How, you know, we want to grow. We want to be able to hire remote and have people all over the country. And I think we can still do that, but they're not going to be in this room with us. So that's different. You kind of have to account for that. And some days I love being at home and I don't want to come here. And other days, I really love coming here and being in this room with five other people.
Listen in as she relates the triumphs as well as the traumas of growing from a solo biller into a true business owner.
When I started Opus Lex in 2018, I did not set out to create a scalable firm. I did not create processes or systems. I was really just focused on being a solo biller and supporting my family.
With terrier-like tenacity, Amanda has successfully grown her practice to become one of the leading legal recruiting firms in the Southeast United States.
I think you have to have the attitude of, like, I will not give up, I will not fail, right? And I don't know when I'm ever going to feel that we have succeeded. I'm not sure what that end game is.
Yeah.
I feel like I'll know it when I get there.
Amanda, I'm so happy that we're doing this finally after almost 3 years since the last time we recorded a podcast together.
It's always great to see you. Welcome to Atlanta.
Yes, and thank you for hosting us in your office.
I'm so glad you're here.
December 2021 is when we last did this properly. Of course, we've spoken a lot since then. What's new? What? Give me an update on everything that's happened in the last 3 years.
Yes. Well, December 2021, I believe we were a team of three. Now we're a team of six. We're in a different office. That was a wild year, of course, with COVID and sort of the recovery thereafter. But we've doubled in size. We've kind of reimagined, I think, who we want to be and who we are. And we've changed our model. So a lot has happened since then.
All right. Fantastic. So let's talk about that. What specifically have you changed regarding your business model?
Sure. So last December, we had our first ever team retreat and annual planning session. So we spent 2 days together. We actually went through Traction. I know you're a big fan of that book. And we went through the EOS framework and really mapped out our year and had been reading a lot about team-based models and in hiring and training, just felt that this was a good time to try a team approach. Mm. So we've completely revolutionized the way that we are working our jobs now, working together, and also how we're hiring and training according to those roles.
All right. I love this. There's so much I want to find out about that. So first of all, tell me about your annual team event and that's a brilliant idea, first of all.
It was great.
I think every company should do that. Where did you do it and what was the format?
We did it at my lake house in the North Georgia mountains. So that was really lovely. And the format was that everybody did a little bit of homework before they came. I had read Traction and gave everyone sort of the cliff notes so that they were familiar with the terminology and what we were going to be doing. And I think if I remember, the first exercise is to share what you like about each other. And I thought that was such a, obviously, it was a great way to get started, but it was also so affirming for so many to hear positive feedback from their colleagues. And then I think in terms of what we felt that each other could improve upon, it was already the stuff that that person knew, which was also affirming, right? Like that we had that much self-awareness and that we're kind of all on the same page. There were really no curveballs there. So we went back through and looked at our year, what worked, what wasn't working, the types of job orders and clients we had, the types of candidates we had, and really where we wanted to go with that and how we were working together. I felt that we could certainly expand our billing, our revenue, our job satisfaction by changing our roles and not working as individuals, siloed and kind of bouncing around working these different jobs, but really getting in the same boat, so to speak, and rowing together. And our assistant, who, as we were just discussing, is remote. She also joined for the whole time. So
oh, that's cool.
She was there on Zoom with us the entire time. And she also had some really great insights into each of our personalities, habits, and things that we could improve upon.
Okay. Wow. So this is, I'm loving this.
And we had the whiteboard and everything. It was on the fireplace. So
fantastic.
You have to take that.
So this feedback session that you described, how did you facilitate that to make sure that it was productive and positive and that it was useful feedback rather than people getting hurt feelings and that sort of thing?
Yeah. Well, everything was, of course, out in the open in a group setting. It was all very neutral. We followed, I think EOS has an annual planning document. So we just followed that document.
Okay.
And we really also utilized it. You and I have talked about this, that when I started Opus Lex in 2018, I did not set out to create a scalable firm. I did not create processes or systems. I was really just focused on being a solo biller and supporting my family. So a lot of that work in terms of, you know, mission, vision, values, all of that stuff was part of our planning. And this is, of course, now that was, you know, year five that we're doing this. So for anyone who hasn't done that stuff yet, there's still time to do it. So it was neat that we could have really the whole team be a part of that. And I think, again, our values have remained consistent, but just to verbalize those and sort of reaffirm and confirm literally on the board, putting that stuff together was really nice. And so we just worked through the program. And then, as you probably know from that book, everyone takes on some rocks, which are just goals. So the company has rocks, each individual has rocks, and it's just a really nice way of everyone contributing to a collective goal that we've all set out to achieve.
This is awesome, Amanda. I'm really impressed and proud of watching you develop as a leader. I think it's, yeah, really cool.
Thank you.
So what specifically, you said you changed your model. So what did you change from and what did you change to?
So we had a very traditional model of, you know, folks running full desk.
Yeah.
There were some people who fell into sort of natural roles where, you know, for example, I'm more of a business development person. I usually have some people feeding candidates to me and they're sourcing the candidates, but we really segmented it out in a more formal way. And the idea was to be able to, I think, give everyone a day-to-day role in which they felt like they could be a master in, right? They could really hone those skills, perfect that craft, know their market, know what they're doing, and use their time in sort of the highest and best way. So we also, you know, one thing that we had to pull in, of course, is that we have to, when you're working with a team-based system, everyone has to agree on what you're working on. Right. So one person can't step out and go work on this type of job that is not sort of native to what the team is doing because it disrupts the efficiency of the model. So that was a big part of the conversation is, OK, what are we doing? Which clients are we serving? What are we trying to achieve here? What's the most profitable? What are our statistics like? What are our ratios like with these types of jobs versus these types of jobs? So we had to make some hard decisions there.
Okay, this is brilliant. So can you elaborate on how does the team break down? Like how does it work with this team-based approach?
Sure. So We currently have sort of someone in business development, right, who is bringing the job orders. Most of our work, as you know, is contingency based. And this is something that I really struggled with because I think, especially with law firm work, most of these roles are posted. It's not typically hard to get the order or submit a candidate or sign the law firm's agreement, right? That's sort of the easy part. As you know, with direct hire recruiting, finding the candidate and presenting the candidate is the much more challenging aspect of it. However, I think one of the differentiators that we focus on a great deal is our relationships and client relationships. So for example, we don't ever work on a job order without having a phone call with the client, which sounds really basic, but there are plenty of people I've learned who do, and this is common practice. So we have decided to really make business development, even in a contingency environment, a full-time position in terms of cultivating those jobs, finding out as much as we can about the job, and then sort of managing that process. Then we have what we refer to as a recruiter, and they're responsible for engaging and presenting candidates and managing them throughout that process. And then we currently have a sourcer as well, who is, of course, sourcing the candidates and just creating lists for us for the recruiter to call and engage.
Fantastic. Okay. And what's been the benefit so far of that transitioning to that model?
I think for the recruiter, it's helped them become more of a market master in whatever niche we've decided to play in at that time. If it's law firm associates, of course, they're really focused on that. That's all they're doing is talking to those candidates. So they're not getting distracted by needing to go find a new job order. They're not doing any sort of administrative work. Of course, they're not even really building those lists of candidates themselves. So they should be perfecting that particular skill, and we should have a higher output according to that. For the business development folks, which includes me, for what it's done for me as a business development person has allowed me to maybe, one, work on more strategic things that I've been more interested in that are maybe at a higher level that don't fit into this model, but have still kept the bread and butter of our practice moving.
Great. That makes sense. Have there been any downsides?
I think there is a lot of process involved and there has to be a lot of communication. So we've spent a great deal of time and, you know, certainly leveraging technology, building that out in terms of who is doing what and then how to communicate with each other when sort of the next step is ready. And of course, you know, where to spend our time and our efforts.
I think 100% that's right. It's the communication. Because if you're a full desk recruiter, then you know everything about the client and you know everything what's going on with the candidate. There's not a communication gap, if you like. But if there's three people involved with that process, then there's huge scope for efficiency. But then there's also a risk of miscommunication. So how have you structured your communication to avoid that?
Yeah, well, I think there's a huge risk for inefficiency too.
Okay.
It's like, you know, you were saying, because now, whereas you did have one person, you have three people, theoretically, maybe four sometimes involved, depending on sort of what your team has. And actually, we do have another person now. I'm thinking on the team that we'll come back to in a minute that I didn't mention and that's a part of that process. So one thing that has been a game changer for us in this, and I think I'm very visual, so helping me visualize the workflow has been creating dashboards on monday.com.
Oh, cool.
And then creating automations there, which of course is integrated into Slack and everything else so that there are specific people for specific tasks and they're being notified when status changes or anything else.
Okay. I'm going to write down monday.com to circle back to it because that could be a whole tangent. So you've radically changed your model. You mentioned systems and processes. Can you talk a little bit about your journey and developing those?
Well, when I started, I only knew what I knew. So there were no systems and processes other than what was native to my own head and my own style. So I think, you know, trying to train, educate, figure out what works, but also to adapting to changing environments, changing generations, and finding out, is it the email? Is it the text? Is it the LinkedIn note? Is it the phone call? And so doing all of that at scale has been hard to design, but, and, you know, as I think we talked about earlier, figuring out what's working and what's not, and what's just a process for the sake of process, or what's a process that is really working, and sort of finding out where the magic is in that whole strategy.
Yes, absolutely. That's a great way of putting it, because many small firms who want to scale, this is an obstacle. It's, there's a lack of systems and processes. And so that means that, number one, the owner tends to be a bottleneck.
Yeah.
And number two, there's too much knowledge just contained in your head. And in the short term, it feels easier. I'll just do it myself,
right,
rather than delegate and give people the authority and the responsibility and the ownership over it. But at the same time, so there's clear, I mean, you can't scale without systems and processes. It's just not possible. But we don't want to create processes for the sake of it. So it's finding that sweet spot. Can you share an example of a process you've got in place that has really worked well?
So we use Crelate. And one of the things that I think has been really helpful in hiring new recruiters, training them, and also just creating efficiency has been creating templates within Crelate. So whenever they do a phone screen, a Zoom interview with any candidate, they cannot continue without answering these required questions. I'm sure a lot of people listening to this podcast will say, well, why did this person move from this job to this job? Oh, I don't know. I didn't ask that question. Okay, well, we've got to call them back and find out. Well, will they take 200 instead of 220? I don't know. I don't know what their bottom number is. All right, we got to call them back.
Yes.
So things like that have been really instrumental in creating efficiencies, and also just, I think, helping newer people get up to speed faster in terms of the information they need to obtain in an interview. And then we're doing the same thing on our job order intake forms as well.
Brilliant. I love this. I remember going to my boss when I was a recruiter with a couple of years experience. I was all excited about a new job that I just won. And he started asking me questions that I did not know the answer to. And I found that experience so horrible that immediately I, like, there was no way I was not going to ask that question the next time, right?
Absolutely.
And so that's kind of the way that I learned. And, but it's so much better if that's almost baked into the process.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. No, I get that. Awesome. And give me another example.
Yeah. A lot of the things that we're doing also, I think, you know, hopefully impact the candidate and client experience. So, and this is something small that is really easy to do, but I think it's had a tremendous impact on our client and candidate service and just the way people experience our brand and working with us. You know, having our assistant send out interview confirmation emails to the candidates ahead of time, hyperlinking the bios of the people they'll be meeting with. They also receive thank you note prompts an hour after their interview concludes. And that's all sort of pre-scheduled, just reminding them and giving them the email addresses of the people that they met with. So those are very small things, but I'm surprised that most agencies don't do those. And it makes a huge difference just in terms of the level of service that our clients and candidates experience, and how prepared and supported our candidates feel.
I love that. That is such a nice idea. And what's cool about it is, I'm sure that a lot of recruiters and owners do some of those things some of the time,
sure,
but there's a lack of consistency. And a lot of it is down to the individual to remember, to remind the candidate, or to tell them, hey, it's a good idea to send a thank you note, et cetera. And when people are busy or stressed, some, those things can just slip through the cracks pretty easily. And so by systemizing this, you are ensuring that there's
always a very high standard and that nothing gets missed. So I think this is brilliant. Amanda, what's cool is you say, oh, this is just a little thing, but when you start stacking up all these little improvements to the process and automations that make the client experience better, the candidate experience better, the job of the recruiter easier, then it really adds up.
It really does. And that's something that's huge. And I think it's also too, just like you said, those are easy things to do, but they're also time consuming when you're running a desk yourself. And so you're trying to get out the door for a client meeting or you need to submit a resume. And so there are lots of shortcuts that people are taking every day. Sure. And there's a cumulative effect to that as well. So even just, you know, formatting and branding your resumes that you're submitting so that it looks professional and you have a marketing opportunity there for everyone who's going to receive the resume. That's something else. It's sort of an automatic thing, you know, that we're doing. But it's infinite. And you're right. I think looking back on that stuff 5-6 years ago, we had none of that. So and now I can't imagine that we would ever operate without those things.
That is awesome. I'm really, really impressed with that. We were talking before we started recording about the E-Myth. Mm-hmm. And so, because that's a book that I reference in our coaching program. And it's kind of, I think it was the original book about systemizing your business. Since then, of course, there's been EOS and there's a growing kind of body of work on that topic now.
I love it. You said that. You know, that's what Opus means.
As I said it, I was...
That was perfect.
Yeah.
Well done.
Opus Lex, yes. Body of work.
Yes. Thank you.
Fantastic. So what do you think of the E-Myth and how applicable has that been to your business?
I read the E-Myth maybe... earlier this year, maybe this summer, I don't remember when I read it. And I think, yeah, so it's the idea is that you are either a practitioner, which most recruiters are, you are a manager, which of course, I know you talk a lot about the role of the billing manager that's very common in agencies, and or you are an owner. Currently, I am all three.
Yeah.
As most people probably are who are listening to this, and that's really difficult. So the general idea is that you are creating systems and processes so that you can hire according to those systems and processes, and of course your values, and which your hiring also has a system and process too in this scenario. And you can plug in almost anyone to these systems and processes and be successful and also have a consistent outcome. So the main case study is McDonald's, which I think he coined as the greatest small business in the world, is what he said. Of course, not a small business, but that's what he called it in the book. And so to me, it did have an impact, not that we're hiring anyone or plugging in anyone, but that maybe it shouldn't be quite so difficult for people to learn how to do this business. And maybe we can find a few common denominators in terms of activity, best practices that we do systematize. We do give them steps to follow. And if they do these things and they're not successful, then it's on us because we created the system when we created the steps. But they should have a reasonable amount of success following these steps that we have created. The challenge, I think, is getting all of that out of your head and thinking about what your style has been and thinking about how to apply that to the company writ large and future-proof it so that plenty of others can come in and follow that model and still be successful.
Yes, exactly. I think what I liked about the E-Myth was the example that he uses in the book. It was a little bit one of those annoying business, like sort of stories.
The lady right? with the pies.
Exactly. Yeah. So lady who likes baking and decides to open her own bakery, right? And just because you're a fantastic baker does not mean you can run a profitable bakery. That's a completely different skill set and need, like there's so much more to that than just making nice pies or what have you, right? So I felt that was definitely transferable over to recruiting because, you know, there's a lot of people who are excellent at recruiting and then decide to open up their own recruiting firm and then quickly realize this is a whole different thing to just billing, right? And we can talk more about that later, maybe. So I like that. But what was missing in the e-myth for me, which EOS kind of answered, is, because I was I think the term he uses is technician, right? It's the person who does this thing that makes the pies,
that's
right?
The pie maker, right.
The pie maker. And I understood the theory of creating these systems and processes, and that would allow you to scale because then you could hire people and et cetera. But actually doing that, creating those systems and processes, and I found so difficult, Amanda.
Mm-hmm.
And so what EOS kind of, the light bulb for me there was that it doesn't have to be just you. There's different types of people. So you've got the visionary and you've got the integrator, right? And so then that's when I hired Leanne, right, and she's the integrator. And that's when things really took off. And when I was just the visionary by myself trying to implement and scale, and I was treading water. It just wasn't kind of happening for me. But the other issue I have with eMyth is I don't think anybody can do this job of being a good recruiter. And even if you have all the best systems and processes, I do think it's not for everybody. It takes quite a unique mindset.
Yeah.
And you do have to work hard and you do have to have a level of intelligence. And so I think it's the combination of those two things. It's having great systems and processes and hiring the right people. That's when things can kind of take off.
Absolutely. But, I mean, the raw materials have to be there.
Yeah.
Of course, I know we talk a lot about resilience here. And then, you know, for me, like one of our main core values is intellectual curiosity. So I feel so strongly that if you're not intellectually curious, like this is not the job for you. And of course, you have to be able to connect with people, which is easier said than done. And something that is very difficult, if not impossible, to teach someone.
I don't think you can teach how do you connect one human being to another. You can teach things like rapport, like right now we're sort of mirroring each other. That's unconscious, obviously, because
our hands are cold.
Yeah. You can teach some like principles like that, but I don't think you can teach someone how to connect at a human level. So interesting stuff. So let's expand back out. Like looking back over recent times, Amanda, what else are you proud of or what else do you think is exciting happening at Opus Lex right now?
Sure. A few things. Well, one of the things, back to the e-myth, that happens to the pie maker is that she realizes that she has no time to make pies anymore.
Right.
And that's really what she wants to do. And so for me, one of the things that this model has allowed me to do is kind of explore things that I'm more interested in that are not sort of the day-to-day placement or transaction, but maybe, you know, things that I haven't done before, types of deals or searches that I haven't worked on yet. And of course, to thinking of new ways to grow the business and to attract new talent. So that model has freed up my time and sort of my brain space to go out and, I think, you know, utilize myself to the highest and best of my abilities, like hopefully the pie maker there. So things that we're most proud of, excited about.
Yeah, things you're excited about, things you're proud of.
Okay.
So. Yeah. So what are some of the new areas that you're branching into that when you're on the hamster wheel, you have to keep the placements coming in because that's, you know, you have to get lights on. So what are you now able to explore and what kind of things?
Sure. So we recently hired someone to focus exclusively on contract staffing.
Really?
That's very exciting. You know that was my background for about 10 years prior to opening Opus Lex. So we've always had a contract component to our business since our inception, but have never had a full-fledged dedicated person. So we're really excited about that. And I expect great things from that hire and that initiative. And going back to sort of the team approach and freeing up others' times, I think we've really enjoyed working together in a collaborative way. That's just created a different experience for everyone on a day-to-day basis. But it's also allowed us to get out of these sort of single placement weeds that we're in, at least in the legal field, and I was telling you earlier that we're currently working on moving an entire group of partners to a new firm, which is new and exciting for us. And, you know, a type of deal that we haven't done before that, you know, we're just thrilled about. So
that's so cool.
Yeah. So that's just a great example of something. Whereas if I were still deep in maybe an associate deal or eight of them, as is probably more common, that I just wouldn't have the bandwidth or the capacity to take on something like that.
Did you know that many of our listeners first heard of the Resilient Recruiter from a friend or colleague? Word of mouth really is the best form of advertising. So if you enjoy the show and get value from it, I'd be grateful if you would pay it forward by sharing it with others. Have a think for a moment. Who in your network might benefit from this podcast? Maybe a current or former colleague or a fellow member of a recruiting association? It would mean the world to me if you would drop them a quick email, text, or LinkedIn message with a link to the show. Thank you so much for your support. Now let's get back to the interview.
Fantastic. So just breaking these down,
yeah.
Adding the contract, it was a no-brainer, right? Because A, that was your background for a long time. B, it's recurring revenue, and it's just such, if you do it right, it's such a beautiful way of doing business. But I think you do need someone dedicated to it. It's very hard to really grow. You can dabble in it on the side, but to really grow something, you really need that focus.
Yeah, you need a concerted effort, and you need someone who is not having to stop their direct hire desk to do it, because it does have a different sense of urgency and there's a different timeline with it. So you need that person available to fill those roles and to be there and sort of respond very quickly when those things come in. That's huge. So we're excited to see where that goes. It's still very new for us, but we do have, of course, the systems and the processes in place for staffing those. And since we started, we've probably kept around between 10 and 15 contractors on billing.
Fantastic.
Over the years. So we are set up to do all that stuff. So that's great. So having somebody focus on that will be wonderful. The other thing that we didn't talk about that we have added to our team-centered approach is a researcher dedicated really to business development. So think of them as a SDR, sales development representative. So someone who is finding the right contacts for maybe an MPC effort for each candidate. So one of the other things we did at the beginning of the year, after this planning session with this sort of all this change, as if there wasn't enough, we also implemented Crelate. And one of the things I like about Crelate, not a plug for Crelate, is that they do have really a dedicated sales workflow. And I think that's something that most platforms are missing and most recruiting firms are missing, is a visual focus on business development. So we have this researcher finding contacts, identifying the candidates who are interested in being active in the market, and then having a process for pushing those out in an efficient way.
That's super cool. So if I understand correctly, so this person is focused on research, but related to business development.
Yeah.
And then separately, you have a sourcer who's researching and building lists of candidates.
Correct.
Okay, great. Then you've got the recruiter who is
engaging
the candidates, and you've got yourself, and is there anyone else on the BD effort?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So you've got a couple of people who are then focused on the BD effort. Brilliant. It is becoming like a machine.
We'll see.
Yeah.
That's awesome. The idea.
I love it. And so exploring different types of deals, like the, you know, team move that you mentioned.
Yeah.
You also have grown the team. So up to six, did you say now?
Yes, currently six.
Okay, fantastic. What's been the learning process of trying to grow the actual team size? Because that itself is a challenge for many business owners. What have you learned from having gone through that?
Do you mean just in terms of making the number bigger, or like, who are we hiring?
Yeah, well, I guess the two are linked, because the reason it's hard is because it's hard to find the right people to train them, integrate them, get them performing.
Yeah.
And most owners go through ups and downs with that. What's been your journey?
I think going back to those core values in terms of some of our core values, intellectual curiosity, earnestness, relationships first. And so really trying to stay quality over quantity, really trying to imbue those values throughout our hiring process and every day that we're in here together, I think has been essential in reminding everyone what those are and why they exist and how we can implement that into our processes. But I really do believe that if we are finally as an industry or as a practice moving towards a team-based approach, which I think a professional services firm should be, then it should become easier to hire and scale for different jobs that, to your point, attract different personalities and skill sets. And then rather than just hiring the same person over and over again, and sometimes you get lucky and sometimes you don't, and you're constantly replacing that seat, which I think is what we've been doing, at least, you know, until since I've been in this industry.
Do you know what? That's a really good point, because running a full desk is really hard and not everyone can do it. And so if that is your only option, if that's, we need someone who can do that, I think you're going to have a lot more turnover to try and find that superstar, you know, full desk recruiter.
I think what's challenging, but in a good way for us, is getting somebody in new, who's new to the seat, new to whatever role they're occupying, and then learning more about them. So, and then saying, because we're a young company in terms of where we are in our growth, and we have a tremendous amount of runway. So then saying, I wonder if this person is best utilized in the role in which we've hired them, or should we move them over to something? And it could even be a role that we haven't had before. Mm. And would they be better utilized there?
That's cool. Yeah, definitely. Because in a lot of firms, it's like, well, this is a job and you need to achieve this level to perform. Whereas it sounds like you've got more flexibility potentially in utilizing someone's unique ability, as Dan Sullivan calls it, finding what that is. And that's awesome. Have there been anyone in your team that has moved around, or?
We have somewhat modified roles in the past, but I wouldn't say in a fundamental way. Mm-hmm. No, we've tweaked them and we've added some things. Maybe we've removed some things, but we haven't made any big shifts. But I think when you are considering sort of the architecting, the design of your firm, and maybe what you don't have the capacity to do now, but what would be great in the future, sometimes you should or maybe could consider the people you already have under your roof. Maybe you need a full-time data management person, and that's all that they do is manage the data. And maybe that person's already sitting with you and they would be more fulfilled and more successful in that role than perhaps cold calling candidates.
I mean, it's a good point that scale creates more opportunities for everybody, right? And so this is the beauty of growing. Growth is good in the sense that it creates more career options for everyone on the team. What's the plan? Like, you reset your vision now. What's the goal?
So we've developed these teams, right? And I think the idea is to replicate them. The great thing about us is that someone could come to me and say, I want to create an intellectual property team that's practice-based, right? It's not geographic. It's not sort of level in terms of associate, partner, or anything like that. And I'd say, great, that's your practice now. These people are only going to do intellectual property. Maybe another team is, you know, more industry focused, or maybe they only do in-house recruiting versus law firms, yeah, or they're only going to sell retained searches. So I think we have a lot of flexibility within the model to be creative and let people kind of come to us with, you know, what they already love and feel strongly about and are successful with and build a team around them.
That's awesome. Any other highlights, things that you think you've done? And want to say you, as a business, you guys have done really, really well?
I think we are very, I think we're currently very well connected in terms of the day-to-day and how we're communicating. There's just a ton of visibility, literally and figuratively, in terms of what's going on. We've changed some of our revenue models, some of our compensation models to reflect that. And that has all been very well received.
Brilliant. So tell me more about this. The collaboration and the communication and the visibility, how does that work?
Well, I think in terms of, you know, you may remember, Mark, when I was first working with you in 2020 or 2021, I had no KPIs, no reporting. It was something that I really didn't want to do as sort of a reaction to past trauma,
yeah.
Maybe, right?
Yeah.
Now I'm not at all afraid of that. And I think, you know, of course, the key is not managing to those things, but just using data and saying, huh, okay, well, we have 70 people in this, but we've only submitted one. Why is that? Where are things falling off? So utilizing our technology, putting everything in the system, having open and honest conversations on a routine basis about activity, about conversion rates, all of those things that demystifies those conversations and removes any fear from them because it's just data. So really embracing that has been a big change and kind of normalizing that. Do I get a gold star?
I'm so happy. You've been converted.
I've been converted.
Hilarious.
Yes.
So, okay, that's interesting. You mentioned visibility literally and figuratively. Obviously, we're in your office right now, so it looks like we're all sitting together at a big desk here.
Yeah.
How often does that happen?
We are in here as a team 2 days a week.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's literally like this.
Fantastic. And then when you're not together, then how are we collaborating effectively?
Yeah. So I'm a huge fan of Monday.com, like we talked about. Yeah. And the great thing with Monday is you can literally outline your workflow and the automations and notifications to notify specific people for specific things. And again, if you have a team-based approach, that's a great thing to do and you can let it run itself. I'm also very visual. So if I'm looking at this workflow and seeing that we have maybe a lot of people sort of stuck in the bottom of our workflow, which is, interviewed, waiting for feedback, then, you know, that's a cue for the job order managers to get on the horn and let's close some of these things. But if we have nothing at the top, we're not inputting any new resumes, we're not scheduling any new interviews, we don't have any initial send outs, right? Then we know that we have a sort of a problem that's looming at the top, sort of in terms of our forecasting, right?
So is Monday integrated with Crelate?
It's not, but they mirror each other. So I think Monday is, actually they might be on a few levels through a few zaps. But I think Monday for me is just a much more easier high level overview of like the day to day. But we do have those workflows mirrored in Crelate as well.
Okay. Is that not a duplication or like?
It is a little bit. I think maybe we're getting into the weeds here a little bit. But for me to be able to say, you know, click, format resume as step one to the person who does that and for her to get a Slack notification that she's been pinged, I don't think I can do that in Crelate.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Now, I looked at Monday.com and we end up going with Asana, which has, it's not identical, but it's got overlapping.
I have to use it with our marketing people.
Okay. The reason being, Asana just seemed much more user-friendly because Monday looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. And when you see the ads, it's like, wow, that looks amazing. I get these ads on YouTube for Monday all the time for some reason. But then I realized I'm going to have to hire a whole person to just
build.
No, you don't. I set it up for my husband's law firm as
well.
Okay. Yeah. He has sort of a similar intake process with his clients and sort of a series of things that need to occur to get to the finish line. And so I set it up for him months ago and he didn't use it. And then finally he did. He hired an assistant and now they use it and they can't live without it.
Okay. But it's the setting up of the workflows and everything in the first place.
It took me an entire Sunday afternoon.
Really? And that's it?
That's it.
Wow. Okay. I may maybe should look at it again.
I'll be your personal Monday concierge.
Okay. Thank you. So let's talk about tech stack then, well, since we're on that topic now. Yeah. So you've got Crelate, Monday, Zapier you're using for some integrations now.
I don't think about Zapier a lot because I think we've set it up and it's done. Yeah. I don't think I'm a Zapier expert though, but it is pretty neat. So Crelate, Zapier, Monday. We just reduced our LinkedIn recruiter slots.
Yeah.
I know that's been a big goal of mine. I know it's something that's talked about a lot here on this podcast. So we're seeing sort of less benefit with that. We did get a sales navigator license for our new contract person. So I'm interested to see how that works out. Mm-hmm. We also have Zoom Info. And we use something that's probably specific to legal recruiting firms, Leopard Solutions, which is
Leopard, as in
the animal. Okay. So Leopard is really a database. It's a web crawler, essentially. So it indexes most AmLaw 200 and well-known boutique law firms mm-hmm. and tracks movement. As well. So it's something that's very specific in terms of you can filter by level of law school, years of experience, of course, legal specialty, geography, things like that.
Okay. Interesting. That sounds cool. Any other technology platforms in terms of like outreach or?
Yeah. So we had Interseller for a number of years. We might be going back to that. We're currently using the sequencing feature in Crelate.
Okay.
I'm not sure that it's working to the best of, to my standards currently. Mm-hmm. We have looked at Outplay, but don't currently use it. And our sourcer also has a higher easy license.
Okay. We should talk about this because since you and I last worked together, we've come on, there's a whole new, a lot's changed. Because when we worked together, that was pre- AI, even.
Yeah.
That's how,
yeah.
Right. Old. I mean, that's how long ago we're talking. So, yes, definitely on the outreach side of things, both in terms of scaling as well as integrating AI mm-hmm. and personalizing. There's a whole nother chapter there, Amanda. But any other automation tools that you're using or?
I don't think so. I mean, we are leaning into ChatGPT more for writing bios and then, of course, editing those. I don't think they're, like, I don't do any, like, automated LinkedIn messaging or anything like that. We also have, this has been a big thing, we do have RingCentral
yes.
integrated into Crelate.
Great.
And I love that we can text from Crelate and it's recorded through RingCentral and that the inbound and outbound calls are all logged in Crelate. That's like huge.
I was just talking about, so I did an Apex coaching call yeah. before coming over here.
Yeah.
We were exactly talking about this because yeah. so many people are still, their team members are all making calls through their mobile
yeah.
cell phone, you would say,
right?
Right? And none of those are being recorded.
Right.
B, they're not being logged on the system.
Yeah.
That's a manual thing. I have to say, oh, I called so-and-so.
Right, which no one does.
Exactly. And so they're missing the opportunity to use call recording for training, for coaching, as well as the transcripts for all kinds of things.
Yeah.
But also just from a workflow point of view, think of how much more efficient it is to click a button to dial instead of having to...
Well, I mean, that's how it was in 2007 when I started at Robert Half, and it was amazing. You walked in, you sat down at your cube,
yeah.
you put your little headset on, and you had your planner, which,
yeah.
you know, I think Crelate's also great at if you use that function, and you click to dial, and that you were just clicking. So what's old is new again.
Exactly.
And now you can text, which is perfect because I've been like wanting that whole system back because it was so great. It's called MicroJ Plus. Robert Half bought it. I don't know if they still own it or not, but it was the best system I've ever used still to this day. Sorry, CreateLate. It was amazing. So that's good. But the other thing, back to sort of like visibility and efficiency, you know, the other thing that CreateLate does, speaking of tech and like how we're all communicating, is it also diaries all your emails as well. So rather than having to ask my colleague, did you talk to so-and-so? Da-da-da-da-da. Have you heard from them? I can just go look at the contact and see, have they had any calls? Have there been any inbound or outbound emails? So I can catch up, and you're kind of getting a daily digest as well of sort of activity and what's happening, which is really nice. Again, total visibility for everybody. It's not just that I can see that, everyone can see that.
Beautiful. That brings us right back to visibility again. So I like how you've got visibility on the contact record, mm-hmm. the phone calls, the texts, the emails. You've got Slack messages mm-hmm. going to people when they have to do something like, oh, format the CV that's been added to the system or whatever.
Yep.
Beautiful. Anything else that has facilitated the collaboration with your new business model?
Well, of course, we're on Zoom like everyone else a lot of times. But I also think, you know, sitting together in a room is amazing. And it's something I still struggle with, honestly. Like, we want to grow. We want to be able to hire remote and have people all over the country. And I think we can still do that, but they're not going to be in this room with us. So that's different. You kind of have to account for that. And some days I love being at home and I don't want to come here. And other days I really love coming here and being in this room with five other people. So I think that's a balance. And I'm not sure that that's anything that I'm ever going to ever get through on one side or another for me.
Yeah, there is no solution to this conundrum. Alan Fisher is your man to talk about this with, because he's literally gone through that same journey and is now hiring people in other states mm-hmm. and training them, integrating them, you know, making sure everyone can collaborate. I think in office is better in so many ways that you can just never replicate virtually.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many benefits to Absolutely. Remote working that I think the benefits outweigh the cons. And so,
and how do you straddle both? You know,
yeah.
Can you have five people here together in an office and then one person in Wisconsin by themselves? Don't you feel sad for them?
I know you do, I think you have to have
be
that.
So intentional about it.
Exactly. I think, again, yeah, you can and should have the person in Wisconsin. Well, I don't know why he chose Wisconsin, but yeah. If you find someone who's fantastic in Wisconsin, yeah. We should go ahead and hire them.
I agree.
They will miss out by not being here, but...
maybe they form their own kingdom in Wisconsin.
Exactly. And you can get them once a quarter.
Well, you're excellent at that too. Bring your team together and travel and all of those things. And that's something I think that is so meaningful. And for anyone who has a fully remote workforce should absolutely be doing.
Yeah.
If they're not.
Definitely. Amanda, what's been the biggest challenge or the worst part about getting from where you were when we last spoke to getting here now?
I think giving new ideas and systems time to work is really challenging, and not having and also giving myself some grace, right? Like not having this expectation that every year we have to grow 20% year over year or we're a failure and we should just like fold up the whole shop and burn it all down. You know, trying something new, which is scary in and of itself, and then believing that you have implemented and executed it properly or to the best of your abilities, and then giving it some time and not giving up on that. The challenge is when do you know or when do you not know that maybe you're delusional or that this isn't working?
Yeah.
And when to change course, right? And I think that's probably true in any entrepreneurial journey and any level of business ownership.
Yes. This is something I'm very alive to, because we have this with our coaching clients, right? And
That's
the reason it's a 12-month minimum term, because things just don't instantly, like
if you want to implement email marketing in your business, it's not a question of like, oh, sign up for this platform, write some emails, and all of a sudden you're going to get a flood of new clients or candidates or what have you, right? Because I only wish it was that simple, but there's a lot of iteration and tweaking, and things don't work straight out of the box, and you have to, but recruiters are not the most patient. Like if you were to profile us, right? Patience isn't typically the one of our strong qualities. And so you do have to give things time with something new to really make it work. But as you say, when do you like call time and try something else? So
yeah, and you have to ask yourself too, like, are you adding new people to a new process? Is it the person? Do you have the right people in the right seat? Or is it the process? Or is it both? Or maybe it's neither. Maybe it's just time. So I think figuring those things out and having the, you know, tenacity and resilience to wake up every day and go face those problems again every single day is the hardest part to me.
Yeah. So how do you create that tenacity and resilience then? Because that's a daily challenge for every human being, but especially if you are doing something hard, right? What you're trying to accomplish is not easy.
Yeah.
So how do you do it?
Well, I think you have to have the attitude of like, I will not give up. I will not fail. Right. And I don't know when I'm ever going to feel that we have succeeded. I'm not sure what that end game is.
Yeah.
I feel like I'll know it when I get there, but.
I don't think you ever get to the finish line.
You know,
you can celebrate the wins along the way.
Yeah.
But that's that horizon. It's like you never get to the horizon, right?
Yeah. I don't even actually think there's like a monetary figure or an exit or anything where I will feel like, I totally nailed that. And so it's sort of that, it's the same, whatever the it factor is in running your desk or in search, where you just kind of, maybe we talked about this in the last time we chatted, like you're kind of like a terrier and you can't stop digging, or it's just an itch that you have to continue to scratch, or a puzzle piece that you're just trying to fit in. Like that's to me the same thread that is about sort of trying to figure out how to grow this business and do it properly and do it in a way where people are having fun and enjoying themselves and we're learning things every day and we're celebrating every day. Like that is to me the biggest challenge at this point.
Yeah. Fantastic. Amazing. Amanda, this has been so much fun. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to make sure we discuss today?
I have just been really, really proud of you, Mark, and I've enjoyed watching your growth and all of the things that you all have been able to do and all the many people that you've impacted with your coaching program and this podcast. And so I'm just so grateful to know you and to have you and to be here.
Thank you so much.
You're
welcome.
That
means a lot to me. I appreciate it. Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Thanks for watching. If you enjoyed this conversation, check out some of my other episodes.